A couple weeks ago, we spoke about a new US border policy that would see the separation of asylum seeker children from their families at the border. Almost 2,000 children have been impacted over the past 6 weeks as their parents are jailed for seeking to enter the country. There's talk of children being homed in an old Walmart, with comparisons being drawn to concentration camps. US correspondent Taylor Kaplan joins us now to discuss. Good morning, Taylor.
Good morning, Sam. Morning, Casey.
So how is the US government justifying the removal of so many children from their families?
Well, first of all, there is this new, what's being called a zero tolerance policy when it comes to immigrations and families, undocumented families crossing the border. So in say, the Obama administration's families would be detained together in detention facilities. Yet, because this new zero-tolerance policy requires the government to prosecute adults who cross the border, and since children cannot be held in essentially jail with their parents, they are being separated and put into facilities with just children. So this is how the administration is justifying separating children from their families at the borders, saying that they can't put them with their parents because they're prosecuting them, and essentially using this as a deterrent from others crossing the border, either by themselves or with their families, because they want to make it look unattractive to the U.S., with the possibility that you might be separated from your family.
Now, what's happening to the children who get removed? Who ends up looking after them?
Well, they are put in with the Office of Refugee Resettlement, which is in the care of the Department of Health and Human Services. They are the division of government who are, the children are put in care of this department, and their job is to find a relative who's living within the United States who they can put them in the care of, or put them into the foster care system, which is, you know, already known for being corrupt and very problematic itself. So they are running the facilities that these kids are being put in. You mentioned a Walmart. There was a big box department store in Texas along the border with Mexico where kids are being put in, and you have other detention facilities. The U.S. Border Patrol and Customs releases an official video, I think it was the other day, of this detention facility with chain-link fence cages.
Now, a bill has been drafted that seems to trade these children for the construction of the border wall. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, so if you pay attention to Donald Trump and his handle of this crisis, I mean, Democrat, for the separation of families at the borders, at the Mexico border, saying that these Democrats essentially are separating families because they refuse to fund a border wall in a bill in regards to immigration reform. So essentially the Trump administration is using separation of families as either leverage, or if you want to call them, they're using them as hostages essentially for border wall funding. If you've looked at Donald Trump and how he's handled what are referred to as dreamers, so kids who are brought over the border by undocumented parents, how the U.S. is to deal with these children, he's gone back and forth on this issue of how to deal with them. He shows no coherent ideology in regards to immigration aside from the massive wall, which isn't really a form of policy. It's just wall.
Are you saying the border wall is not really much of a policy? It's just a wall?
Basically just a wall. And Trump has gone back and forth on specific policies in terms of how to deal with especially children of undocumented parents who have come across the border, showing no real ideological convictions on how to deal with immigration reform, but he has insisted on the building of this wall. That is what he has shown he really believes in, and he is essentially blaming Democrats for not funding this wall and by extension blaming Democrats for separating children at the border, which is completely asinine.
Now, the First Lady herself, Melania Trump, has criticized this policy. How significant is it to see her taking a stance seemingly against her own husband?
It's, you know, it raises eyebrows, I guess, and it, I forget exactly what her statement was, but it was something to the effect of, can't we all come together and denounce this policy without really admitting that her husband alone and his administration alone could fix this policy. But it is kind of significant to see that Melania Trump and every single living First Lady has come out and denounced this policy. George W. Bush's wife, Laura Bush, has come out and denounced this policy. Hillary Clinton obviously has denounced it. Michelle Obama has. And this policy of separating families at the border has united a lot of religious leaders with, you know, pretty center-right religious leaders with far-left immigration reformists. So, I mean, it's bringing a lot of people together in alarm over what the U.S. is doing, how much of our horrible history this is recalling, especially when it comes to the internment of Japanese Americans during World War II. It's a real wake-up moment, I think, in this country right now. And there was a tape released today by ProPublica, which is a very reputable news source, of audio of children in a detention facility crying for help. I mean, the video that has been released has been very well controlled by Border Patrol, but this audio, which is essentially snuck and leaked, is really gaining a lot of attention right now. It was released maybe an hour ago. And since then, the press secretary has denied to come out and do her usual press briefing, sending out the leader of the Department of Homeland Security. So that is pretty notable.
We're speaking with our U.S. correspondent, Taylor Kaplan. Now, Taylor, it has been a week since the long-awaited meeting between Trump and Kim Jong-un, and there still isn't world peace. The images from that meeting were kind of remarkable. There was this amazing video with, you know, Trump sort of standing there saying how he wants to look thin in the video, and then we pan to a rather bemused-looking Kim Jong-un on the other side of the table. How much substance do you think there was to the Trump-Kim summit?
You obviously had some pretty surreal moments like that one. and you had, of course, the reality that Trump went into this meeting, a closed-door meeting with Kim Jong-un, and didn't take notes because his justification with that was he has one of the best memories of all time. I mean, this is absolutely insane. But a week later, I mean, the only real concrete policy gain we've seen from this is that the U.S. and South Korea have agreed to stop joint military exercises on the border of North Korea until and basically giving North Korea until January of next year to show progress on denuclearization. Might sound like a people North has promised denuclearization, but it's happened numerous times. In the 90s, under the Clinton administration, they stopped enriching uranium for about 8 years until the Bush administration was elected and took a very hawkish policy toward them. So the North Korea is known for promising denuclearization as a form of leverage because they are working towards nuclear weapons, and denuclearization is a way to get some of the world powers to listen to you, but we're not seeing real concrete gains so far. It's a good photo op for Donald Trump. It's a great photo op for North Korea because they're finally on the world stage and shaking hands with the leader of the free world, or whatever you want to call him. But
we don't want to call him that.
You got to tiptoe around that one. Nothing too much. It was a photo op at most. And we'll see what happens. I mean, if somehow this wild card U.S. president and this wild card North Korean leader are to denuclearize one of the more unstable countries in the world, that will be a win regardless of how unstable they are. But so far, it's, you know, it's a lot of fluff, not a whole lot of substance, but we'll see what happens, I suppose.
Exactly. I think we'll all be keeping our eyes peeled for what comes next. So thank you for joining us today, yeah. Taylor.
Thanks for having me.
That was our US correspondent, Taylor Kaplan, and you can read more from Taylor at sfweekly.com.
You're listening to Breakfast.